voice of women in sport.
Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is season 2, episode 2. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with WISP Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center. In this podcast, I will be talking to Dr. Chelsea Thule. She's a colleague of mine here in the School of Kinesiology at the University of Minnesota. She's a scholar, a researcher, a lecturer, a teacher, and a good person extraordinaire, and we're just excited to welcome her to Tucker Center Talk. So welcome, Dr. Thule.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So we want to dig right in so that our listeners can learn more about your line of research, because it is very unique, groundbreaking, dare we say, maybe one of a kind. And I think a lot of people that I meet in the communities when I'm traveling around the country and around the world are very aware of the work that you have done as a Tucker Center affiliated scholar. So why don't you just big picture tell us in a soundbite what your line of research is about.
My line of research is about community action, listening to the voices of girls and women regarding what they want and need when it comes to physical activity.
And so how did you start getting interested in this line of research?
Back when I was a graduate student in the Tucker Center under the amazing advisorship of Dr. Nicole Lavoie.
Oh, that's maybe why you're on the podcast.
Yeah, the Dr. Nicole Lavoie, the one and only. I was lucky enough to be there when the 2008 Tucker Center research report was released that showed three really important findings. The first was that girls were more active at that time than ever before. The great news. However, girls were still less active than boys, and underserved girls were the least active of all. And we knew very little when it came to the needs, the wants of underserved girls in order to increase physical activity programming in culturally sensitive ways. That really started me on this journey. What can we learn from girls themselves, particularly underserved girls, to meet their needs and make sure that they have opportunity in ways that they enjoy, they look forward to, and ultimately could sustain activity in the long run?
Yeah, I remember vividly sitting in the Tucker Center after we released the Tucker Center research report 10 years ago or 11 years ago now. And we would get the question a lot, you know, well, what do we know about this demographic of girls? What do we know about immigrant girls? What do we know about girls of color, you know, LGBT girls, underserved girls? And, you know, we sort of looked at each other and went, we can do better than that. We have erased the intersectionality and the nuances of girls, not intentionally, but it certainly got our attention. And I think that really launched that line of research for you in looking at a specific population. So let's talk about that, because it's not just underserved girls, but it's a very particular group of girls here in the Twin Cities area. So tell our listeners about the group that you've primarily been working with.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we recognized there was this huge gap in what we knew about all girls, and specifically when it came to girls of color, immigrant girls. And here in the Twin Cities, we have the largest Somali population in the United States. And we were receiving asks as this world-leading Tucker Center that also does community outreach about what we knew when it came to physical activity of underserved girls from community organizers, from PE teachers, et cetera, and we had nothing to tell them. And so that really sparked me to listen to the voices of East African girls, to hear what they faced when it came to physical activity, what they needed, and strategies they had for increasing programming.
Yeah, and I think what I really love about this line of research that I was lucky enough to be a part of through you. I mean, you're really the primary investigator and the expert in this area, is that at every step of the way, you were really intentional about involving the girls, involving the community, and making sure that it wasn't researcher from the outside coming into an underserved population and doing research and leaving. That you wanted to involve them and do research that was for them, with them. And so, yeah, tell everybody what you did for your dissertation, because it was a fairly complicated project. As your advisor at the time, I thought she may never graduate because this is very ambitious, but because you're who you are, you got it done, and it was amazing work. So what'd you do?
I worked to understand space in the Cedar Riverside community, which is the neighborhood where many East African girls live here in the Twin Cities, and the most densely populated community of East African immigrants in the United States. So I really wanted to understand spaces girls were active, spaces girls wanted to be active, why they wanted to be active in those spaces, and if there were barriers kind of keeping them from being active there, or what was going on. And then ultimately suggestions and strategies that they had to increase the spaces they could be active in ways that they would enjoy and support their culture.
Yeah, and I know, I remember as this was happening and you were, you know, really a participant with the girls in a very unique program called the Girls Program, which, forget what the acronym, Girls in Leisurely Sport?
Girls Initiative.
Program, is that right? Oh, the Girls Initiative, that's right.
In Recreation and Leisurely Sports. And that was titled by the girls themselves.
Right, okay. A very clever acronym, and they would have the gym at the Cedar Riverside neighborhood for 2 hours a week, solely dedicated to the girls' basketball program, of which you were a coach. And, you know, for people that don't know, is for the East African girls that most all of them or all of them were Muslim, is that participating in physical activity, they needed a private space where men and boys did not have access to see them being physically active. So, you know, what did you learn about doing research in those kinds, in that kind of space with these girls and the research you were doing?
Yeah, I learned that it's complex. There's historical, religious, cultural values that the girls themselves had, that community members had, you know, parents had, as far as who could be in what spaces, when, where, and how. But ultimately, it came down to, I felt in listening to the girls that if they did have a private female-only space at that time, that they could engage in physical activity in the ways that they wanted, they enjoyed, that upheld their culture, religious norms, and that their parents and other community members were supportive of. The challenge was that there were only 2 hours a week that the girls could have that space.
Yeah, and to my recollection, so out of all the hours of the week at the community center, the girls themselves got 2 hours a week. And even during those 2 hours, often the boys would be knocking at the door or trying to get in and disrupting your 2 hours because they just didn't understand why the girls were getting access to the basketball court.
Yeah, you know, that was a new concept, a new sharing of space. It hadn't been the case before where girls got their own specific time for the gym. And so, yeah, the boys, they would knock on the door. They'd try to peek through. We'd lock the doors. They'd try to peek through the crack. cracks of the doors. We, some of the girls who wanted to, would volunteer to put their hijab in the door because they felt like they were an all female only space. They could take it off and they wanted to ensure boys couldn't see in. Things like that would go on to ensure that that space stayed female only. But it was exactly as you mentioned, it was 2 hours of all the hours of the day. And sometimes we would show up on Sundays, which was one of our days. We'd get to the gym, we'd get to our space, all excited, the girls energized to have their time, and there would be an event going on. There'd be a graduation or another community event happening in that space too. So, you know, there was some of that, but I just kept reminding myself, the girls, all of us community partners would talk and say, okay, this is the first of its kind. It's the first time. We're going to stay patient. We're going to stay the course, but we're going to still advocate. We're going to continue sharing the stories of the girls as to why this is important, why it matters to them, and back it up by research as far as why girls need opportunity to play sport in ways that they want and enjoy. And that ultimately helped to convince stakeholders that the girls absolutely deserve those 2 hours, and nothing should be scheduled during that time other than girls' gym.
Right. Because the way that we, let me just back up way in the beginning when we first did our first pilot study with a little pilot funding before you launch into your dissertation, we learned from the girls, from talking with the girls, is that they wanted and needed female only safe spaces to be physically active. They wanted caring, well-trained female coaches that were generally lacking in their community. And they wanted clothing to help them be physically active, because wearing a hijab or the other clothing that they had, it wasn't breathable, it wasn't comfortable, it was hot, it was restrictive. And they thought that would help them be more physically active. So how did you take that information along with your dissertation and continue on this line of research while you're continuing to work with the girls in the community?
Yeah, now that girls had access to physical activity, they fell in love with it, and they fell in love with playing sport and wanted to do it not only in those 2 hours a week that they have, but beyond it. They wanted to do it outside of those gym walls. Some of the girls were thinking about trying out for their school teams. Others were thinking about playing at the local park, but ultimately wanted to uphold their culture and religion of privacy and modesty by staying covered. That did present a challenge, as you mentioned. The girls talk about, if I'm dribbling down the basketball court in my fully covered hijab, loose flowing skirt and clothing, I have to make a decision sometimes about if my hijab's falling off, for example, fixing that and potentially losing the ball, or maintaining possession of the ball and my hijab falling off, which is a major part of my identity. And I can't just be who I am and play. And so ultimately, allowing girls to be who they are in play is what sort of was a driving factor by trying to figure out together a way that we could design culturally sensitive apparel that allowed them to do both, that they didn't have to make a decision in moments like that, that they simply, again, could be who they are in play.
And so you came up with an idea, and I remember you telling me about it, and I thought, that is an amazing idea, is that you wanted to work with the College of Design here at the University of Minnesota, because we have an amazing department here, the college, that does that work, and work with the girls to design their own culturally sensitive and relevant physical activity clothing. And you did it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, if you're listening right now, you've got to go on the Tucker Center website, and we have a whole explanation of this line of research with pictures, with the girls, of this whole process that Dr. Thule and her team and the community and the College of Design went through to work with the girls, to work with the community elders, to get approval. I mean, there were so many steps that resulted in these girls getting their first ever, to our knowledge, culturally relevant, sensitive uniform. So, I mean, I don't think people understand how much work this was for you, but what was your experience with that project? What did you learn?
I mean, the experience was incredible. And I think in a nutshell, what I learned is the power of girls. That when girls are at the table, ultimately creating and have opportunity to let their voices be heard in whatever way, shape, or form that is. And in this case, it was in the designing of activewear and then later speaking about what it meant in their lives and what they hoped it meant in other girls' lives, that's powerful. That is incredibly powerful. I also learned that when there's a problem and many stakeholders, including girls themselves and the community at the forefront, girls at the forefront come together, great things can happen. And I think, you know, it was a lot of people, a lot of hours of hard work to get to the end result of that first ever activewear.
And I love the piece of this is where the girls help design the uniform, then the designs had to be voted on by the community elders, particularly the mothers and the grandmothers, to say, yes, we approve of that. There was a whole community meeting about that. And then the girls worked with the community elders to sew the actual uniforms. And then at the end, they have a fashion show that they put on themselves to debut the uniforms to the community. I mean, what was that like? When the girls finally got to walk down the modeling their uniforms to their community?
It was a moment that's really hard to put into words, but it was, I think, in all of my years of work and research, a moment I'll never forget of seeing the girls' vision, all of that hard work, the challenges overcome together, and ultimately the fact that they're wearing these uniforms that they drew and that they created and are the first, as you mentioned, that we're aware of their kind to allow them to be who they are and just play. That they did not have to make a choice anymore, that they could participate in sport and uphold their identity and everything they hold near and dear to them was really powerful.
And what was the reaction from the community to these uniforms?
They were thrilled. And I think because they have been involved too, you know, they were so excited and supportive of the girls and all that the girls had accomplished, but they also had ownership over this too, because they were involved from, you know, early on at those, as you say, the gallery walks, where around the gym, they saw the girls' process of designing the clothes. They got to provide input from the prototypes where those designs were put into fabric and they got to look at them and kind of add more input. We were very intentional to ensure that all community members, not just parents, but religious leaders and moms were on board with this. So we partnered with a local mosque, which is where they were so kind. They allowed us to set up our sewing center right as part of the cultural center connected to the mosque. For this particular project, some of the community sewers we were hired were, you know, the most prolific sewers in the community, many of whom were men, who were then involved directly in the project, again, very supportive. And so I think community was also involved at every turn, which helped as far as that early support and continued support throughout.
So one of the things is you're not just the co-PI on this project. It's very complicated. It's not just about helping girls become more physically active by removing a barrier, which means, you know, breathable and comfortable clothing to help them be physically active. But you're having to negotiate all these different stakeholders, religious leaders and parents and teachers and spaces. And I mean, this is really complicated. So what do you say to people who say, you know what, this isn't really research. This is community activism. Come on. You call this research?
I say there's all sorts of ways to do research. And the type of research that we do involves both understanding this very complicated process and all that's required to get to that end result, and then the production of that end result. And through the girls researching clothing, designing their own clothing, and ultimately coming up with this final product, right? Like, it's not a survey. It's not traditional research in that regard, but it certainly is. I mean, the elements and the core of discovery that research involves is there, and ultimately has now had longstanding implication for the girls' lives, that they can wear these uniforms and be active in the ways that they want and enjoy.
Yeah, and some of these girls are now, you know, graduating from high school, they're in college. Some of them are coaches and their own mentors and leaders in the community because of this project. Do you think that's accurate?
Absolutely. There are girls that have now applied for design school. There's a community leader who just completed her master's degree with myself and received scholarships from the Tucker Center, who saw the value of research, and she really speaks about that through her experience. She saw that research can make a difference. And ultimately she wanted to complete her master's to do that. And so, you know, there's these very real, tangible, long-lasting implications above and beyond the girls wearing the uniform, which is massive, I believe, in and of itself. You know, there's teams of girls now playing basketball, not only for their high schools, but competitive traveling basketball that came out of this. And that is research making a difference.
You were doing this project with the clothing and the girls pre Nike Pro Hijab, is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were quite a few years before Nike Pro Hijab.
Yeah, and we in the Tucker Center team, but you, I remember, tried to get this trademarked. And the way you explained it to me was, you couldn't get a trademark because it's like trademarking blue jeans. Talk about discovery, right? I mean, all the things that you learned as a result of this research.
Yeah, I had no clue about anything to do with design. I couldn't sew a button, to be honest. And so I learned as much as the girls on that side of things, as well as this business side. You know, how do you get this product to the masses? And it's still a struggle. We're still working on that and trying to figure out a way, because the ultimate vision that the girls and then, you know, we as a team had is that this isn't kind of these 24 uniforms and that's it, that this is an option in that coach catalog when a coach goes to order uniforms, that's there right alongside the uniform that's always been there. Should a girl on the team want a modest option, that it's available in Target, that it's there and it's an option for people who want it. And so, you know, we have a ways to go. And yes, we've learned you can't trademark clothes very easily. So we're trying to figure that out.
In the day and age where everyone trademarks everything, you can't trademark a hijab.
No, it is hard.
Yes, I have learned that through you. Okay, so last piece of this, because I love this element of it, is so the mothers of the girls that were sort of involved in the gallery walk and the approval and getting the buy-in, what happens with the moms in this process? And where are you at with mothers of the girls you were working with?
Yeah, so especially through these gallery walk events, we got to know the moms really well too, and younger siblings of the girls. And they all were like, well, this is amazing. Where's ours? Like, how do we get clothing too? And we need it just as much to be active in our own lives, and moms specifically talking about role modeling, playing with their daughters, supporting their daughters in that way. So ultimately we were like, yeah, it's a great idea, there's this need, what can we do? And found some additional partnerships through the community, through the People Center, some great supporters, and a grant here at the University of Minnesota through Extension that allowed us to then continue on with that work.
So what happened then is you had a mother-daughter program that combined physical activity units with clothing design for the mothers. Is that right?
Yep, it combined those two things as well as nutrition, because we also were hearing at the time that there was a need for more understanding about ways to cook healthier, using oils and different food items that were a huge part of culture. So we added that piece in. So it was that three-pronged physical activity, clothing design, nutrition program.
I mean, this line of work is so amazing for so many reasons, but for those that know the Tucker Center, this is an exemplar research project that started with a question. Actually, it started with us observing that there was a gap. We didn't know a lot about underserved girls. We certainly didn't know a lot about immigrant girls, and we knew nothing about East African immigrant girls or first generation immigrant. And so we sought to learn what their barriers and supports were for physical activity, and what we learned from them, clothing, training coaches, and safe spaces, we actually work with the community to provide those three things. And then once those three things were provided, it was an iterative process of, well, now we want to serve the mothers. So what's next? I mean, this is sort of a never-ending process of learning from the community, answering a question, solving a problem, and then now you're on to the next problem. So what's the next problem?
Yeah, I think there's many, many options, but probably the two specific ones closest to coming to fruition now are, one, figuring out how we can get this clothing to the masses so that more women, more girls have the, again, option to have modest activewear and culturally sensitive sport uniforms to be who they are, be active, and play. So that's one. The second is there are so many issues going on that we've seen throughout the United States, specifically, but of course worldwide, when it comes to policies in place that aren't supportive of inclusivity of clothing. And many situations where girls have either been excluded from competition, not allowed to participate in a meet, whether that's swimming, track, etc., not allowed to play in a championship basketball game, all these moments that are really problematic. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, from the policy side of things, how can we work with stakeholders to impact policy, the creation of inclusive policy that girls can play, that there aren't restrictions on what they have to wear that may, or often as it stands now, may not meet their cultural needs.
Yeah, and wasn't it within the last couple months, there was a young woman, and I want to say it's Ohio or Indiana, who ran a championship cross-country race in her hijab, and at the end was disqualified because there was some obtuse rule and her coach didn't file the right paperwork, and therefore, you know, she got disqualified. I mean, these things are happening all over the country over a piece of clothing, right? But that piece of clothing is symbolic of a lack of inclusion and diversity that people just, they cannot wrap their heads around why this matters to girls in this population.
Yeah, it really is symbolic. And that piece of clothing can, and in these cases, sometimes has been the difference of a girl playing or not, having the opportunity to play or not. And that is troubling. And so ultimately, what does inclusive policy look like? And what does it look like specific to the clothing? Because there are clothing requirements for almost every sport, right? So how can we be on hopefully the side of working with stakeholders to see the importance and to write that in? But not just us as researchers, ultimately, again, the girls, communities who are impacted by these types of policies at the table, and more than just being at the table, really, it should they want leading the way and us there to support in the ways that they want when it comes to kind of research evidence-based best practices that we know about, but as a collective team.
And I know because you've shared with me that you get calls frequently from youth organizations, park and recreation, high school league, sport clubs, community organizations that are looking for your guidance and expertise and helping them think through these policies. So I think this again is another example of research to practice and making a difference in the lives of girls and women through sport in a very practical way that started with a gap in the literature of what we knew and what we didn't know. So what is the one thing that you really want people to know about this line of inquiry, Dr. Thule, as we wrap up here?
Yeah, I think it is with the girls every step of the way. And that includes the girls, you know, making decisions in every project, leading, guiding, and that just the power of girls is incredible. And there's so much more when girls are truly a part of our teams, not just in the sport sense, but in the leadership sense, in every sense of the word, that we can see girls and women achieve. And I can't wait for all that's to come.
I think that's a great message to end on, is that the power of the voices of girls is needed to move us forward in a positive, inclusive, forward-thinking way. So thank you, Dr. Thule, for sharing your expertise. And I mean, we could talk for hours in more depth about what you've done with this line of inquiry, but for those listening, I'll, in the show notes, I'll have links to this line of research and the Tucker Center and some of the publications that Dr. Thule and I and her colleagues have done on this subject. So thanks again, Dr. Thule, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Megan Kahn, host of the We Coach podcast. Every 2 weeks, I chat with female coaches, administrators, or industry experts from a variety of sports across the country. Be sure to tune in every other Thursday on your favorite podcast player for inspiring conversations. I'll see you there.
That's a wrap for this episode of Tucker Center Talks. I'd love to hear what you think about this conversation, so tweet me at Dr. Sports Psych or at Tucker Center or at Wisp Sports. You can also check out our website at tuckercenter.org and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. Like I said, you can find the show notes and links to resources for this episode at wispsports.com, and just look for the Tucker Center Talks under the Listen tab, where you'll find a lot more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thanks for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. That's a wrap for episode 2 of season 2 of Tucker Center Talks. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference for girls and women in sport.